Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Em, and today I'm chatting with Divya Gugnani.
It's the hard work. Ultimately, it's like you got to pay the dues. There's no shortcut. Mm-hmm. You got to put in the time and the energy to be successful at anything in life, I think, whether it's being a parent or it's being an entrepreneur.
Divya is the CEO and co-founder of Wander Beauty, mom of two, and a serial entrepreneur. So this is actually the second time we're bringing Divya back to the Big Move podcast, and for very, very good reason. She is a wealth of knowledge. She is an entrepreneur. We are covering so much ground on this episode, getting into her recent move from NYC to Miami, raising capital versus self-funding for your business, what the heck is an NFT, being present as a working mom, and of course, her current Wander Beauty and skin essentials. Anyway, let's get into my chat with Divya. Divya, hi. Welcome back to the Big Move podcast.
So happy to be here.
We are thrilled to have you back on the podcast. So we had you back on literally 3 years ago. It was pre-pandemic life. I was in New York City, feels like an absolute lifetime ago. So we have a lot to reconnect and cover with you today. We also had a lovely chance to speak with your amazing co-founder, Lindsay Ellingson, this past fall. Clearly, we're a little obsessed with you guys. So we're just excited to have you. So thank you.
Happy for it.
Awesome. So I guess to back up and give our audience just like a little refresher on like who you are and what Wander Beauty is, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Amazing. Well, Wander Beauty is all about effortless essentials, things you reach for every day, wherever you wander. I follow you on Instagram and you're out and about all over the place. For me, I am a time-starved mom of two young kids. I am, you know, constantly doing my makeup in planes, trains, subways, Ubers, you name it. Doing my skincare routine at the gym, doing my hair at my desk at work when I'm in the office. It's just, you know, beauty on the move for me. And there really were no clean formulations. I know you take that for granted because you're on the other side of the pond in America. It's like definitely you have to read labels and make sure that you're not ingesting hormone disrupting or toxic chemicals into your system. Via your skin, which is your largest organ, the average woman's actually taking in 5 pounds of chemicals a year via her personal care and beauty products. So you want clean formulations, you want things that work for your busy, active lifestyle on the go and have high performance. We have color cosmetics, we have skincare, we have clinical results. We really spend a lot of time innovating in the space. My co-founder Lindsay and I started the brand. We met at a party. And I love what I do. I'm super passionate about building and growing Wander, but I'm also an investor. I have an investment fund called Concept2Co, where I incubate and invest in lots of companies across the consumer and tech sectors. So I'm an investor in a lot of brands that you would be familiar with or that you use on your Instagram, like topicals and the skincare space, Tower 28, which is some clean color, Bloom, which is really focused on Gen Z and, you know, hormonal skincare, and so many others, Hawthorne in the men's space, Bybee, which is in the UK, which you probably know, yes, and distributes here in Target. So I've got my hand in a lot of different brands, Shaz and Keeks in the hair space. That's, sells DTC in the US, just really some wonderful brands. And I love working with entrepreneurs. I really am passionate about it. I feel like I learn a lot from them. I feel like we share a lot of learnings across, you know, our conversations, and we all grow together.
Absolutely. And like everything that you just said, that's really why we wanted to bring you back on the podcast, to really focus in on your experience as an entrepreneur, really a jack of all trades, an investor. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, any life updates that we should be aware of since we spoke 3 years ago?
So many life updates. So last time we spoke, you were living in New York. I was living in New York. I've lived there pretty much my whole life, my whole adult life, post-college, post-going to Cornell University. I love New York. Really feel like the city was incredible, incredible energy, had two children there. And during the pandemic, I left Manhattan, where I lived on the Upper East Side, and stayed out in Long Island for a few months. And Had the pleasure of being in a house and not knowing how to take care of a house. I had a squirrel in my attic. That was fun. Couldn't get the squirrel out of my attic. That was a whole separate project during the pandemic. Couldn't get anyone to come to my house to help me get the squirrel out of the attic. No, I'm serious. Like, it was just so, it was surreal. And I like believe in the humane treatment of animals. So I like didn't want to put any traps. So I was just like trying to find a way to like put food on the edge of the roof so that like squirrels would go there and leave. But they didn't want to leave. So I came back to the city when my kids started school in person again, which was in the fall after the pandemic started. And they went through a whole school year and I was in Manhattan and it was just really depressing and sad with, you know, the pandemic and everything being shut down, obviously trying to keep everyone safe and healthy. And I had a place down in Miami and I came down here for a few days to just, you know, decompress, do a little work. And I was like, I love the life here. I love the quality of life here. I love the weather. It makes me happy. It makes me smile. It's always sunny. There's so much to do here in terms of outdoor life. And I love sports. So I decided to move here. Kids moved here with me. And we're super happy and well-adjusted in Miami. And next month will be my one-year anniversary of living here full-time. And I, fun fact, I have not been back to New York in this 1 year.
I feel like Miami is the life too, especially just like post-pandemic.
It's incredible. And yeah, such a great entrepreneur scene here. So many companies starting up, a lot of activity happening in crypto and NFTs and art and startups. So it's like very exciting.
So exciting. Is there anything that you're missing from New York?
I would say I obviously miss my friends and my family. That goes without saying. And my team, for sure. But I also miss the food. What's great about Miami is like, yes, you have great food, but the variety you get in Manhattan and the variety of like street food you get and inexpensive mm-hmm. options and like really like low-key food is just incredible.
Mm-hmm. I can totally relate to that.
You miss the culinary variety of New York and London.
Yeah, absolutely. But also I just miss the like amazing slice of New York pizza and a great bagel. Those are the two things. I'm still on the lookout here.
Yeah, totally.
So I totally get that. In terms of all of your different businesses, all of your different ventures, like right now, tell us what your focus and your priorities really are.
So number one priority, grow and build Wander. Wander is, you know, going to have its 7 year anniversary, which is crazy. Super excited about that, to think that we've, you know, come this far in 7 years, growing and building that brand both domestically and internationally. In terms of investing, continuing to invest in companies that intrigue me and excite me. I recently made an investment on the sustainability front in a company called Super Zero, which you in Europe are familiar with. So many people opting to use bars instead of liquid formulations to wash their hair and their body. And I love Super Zero and, you know, their focus on sustainability. So continuing to invest in other brands and businesses, continuing to get smarter on Web3, and continue to have that be a part of my life. Like at Wander, we did an NFT drop, which is incredible. And I want to continue to really like get savvy and smart on the space and be a part of it. Not only at Wander, but in my personal portfolio of investments. And I'm also working on something new, which I will tell you about in the fall because I'm still thinking through it.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm really, really happy that you brought up NFTs because this is something that like I eventually want to dive a lot deeper into with guests. But I guess to give like a little intro, like, can you spell out in a really simple form, like what the hell is an NFT?
It's a non-fungible token and it's basically a piece. It's something that, I don't know, how do I explain it? So it could be a digital piece of art. An easy way to explain it is that Damien Hirst, amazing artist from the UK, will do a drop of paintings and they will sell, but he will also do digital prints, which are available as NFTs, and you can purchase the NFT and hold that in your digital wallet. And the idea there is that you have a digital wallet and you hold digital assets in that digital wallet. And you're assuming that the value of those assets are going to continue to grow and you can trade those digital items. And so it's just this idea of instead of having physical goods, having digital goods. And continuing to, you know, trade things in the digital economy.
Okay, cool. I feel like that's a very digestible way of like just learning a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, definitely. So you have had so many successful businesses throughout your career. Like, what do you think has been the main driver of your success?
I think it's hard work. I really do. I just like, I think entrepreneurs see things others don't see. They do things others don't do. So there's part of it is like seeing opportunities and also taking risks. But at the end of the day, you can see the opportunities, you can take the risks. It's the hard work that's the defining factor that creates success. If you put your time and energy against anything, what do they say for professional athletes that 10,000 hours of practice makes you master? It's the hard work. Ultimately, it's like you got to pay the dues. There's no shortcut. Mm-hmm. You got to put in the time and the energy to be successful at anything in life, I think, whether it's being a parent or it's being an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Do you personally feel like that's something that you've always been? Like, do you feel like it's been ingrained in you? Or do you just feel like you've just been motivated like your whole life type of thing and that has just come along with that?
I think it's so interesting. The older I get, the harder I work. It's very bizarre. But I think I work smarter than I worked when I was younger. So I think in you develop some like basic studying skills when you're in elementary school and high school. And then when you're in your university, you really like put those skills to test. Your foundation that you build in your earlier formative years is put to test in a university environment because you're so distracted. You have friends and parties and social stuff. And you're like, do I really want to study? Mm-hmm. Do I really want to get good grades? That's a choice. And those are formative years where you like develop your work ethic, I think, when you're in your university. And then when you have your first job, that's where it's put to the test. And depends on the career you opt for and what you decide to do. For me, it was investment banking. So I think I developed that work ethic kind of during college and post college. So I don't say that I was a very diligent worker in elementary school. I used to come home. I used to have my, you know, cookies and milk or my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and apple juice snack. And then I used to do my homework. But once I was done with my homework, I was done with my homework. I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm finished. Like, let's move on to the next thing. Let's go play sports. Let's play outside with our friends. Let's go ride bikes. There's so many things I love to do. But I think that going the extra mile, working really hard, I developed that in college. I fine-tuned it working in finance. And then it really stuck with me for life.
That makes so much sense. And I guess now as a mom of two in sort of present day, what is keeping you motivated to just like keep driving forward on all of these different projects?
I think it's my intellectual curiosity and my love to learn. Like I love to learn. If I didn't love to learn, I would be dead. Like every day I'm motivated to learn something new. Like what you were talking about and I was, you know, mentioning to you is like, you know, being in the world of crypto and trading Ethereum and, you know, having a Coinbase account and having an Ethereum wallet, like these are all things I knew nothing about. And my intellectual curiosity has always been a driving force. And so I'm always ready to learn about anything and everything. And I'm a student of life. You can learn from anyone and anything. So I don't believe that, you know, necessarily formal school training is everything. I think you can learn at work. You can learn from friends. You can learn from mentors. You can learn from peers. And so I'm very intellectually curious. And I think that that's what motivates me more than anything else.
Yeah.
And this love of learning keeps things exciting every day. You never get bored.
Definitely. And I guess, so on our last episode, a theme that's come up for you a lot is risk taking. So I'd love to talk about that for a second. Like what's the biggest risk that you took with, I guess, Wander Beauty specifically?
So interesting when you create a beauty brand, people expect you to have a huge assortment. They're like, how are you going to woo in customers? Because they may not like one thing. They may like your lip gloss, or they may like your vitamin C serum, or they may like your mascara, or they may like your cleanser. So like, there's so many different ways that you can interact with a customer and build a relationship with them. And we took a bet. Lindsay and I believed that we would create a brand that streamlined your beauty routine, give you fewer things that do more. And that was a premise of the brand. Essentials. I told you upfront, effortless essentials, things you reach for every day, wherever you wander. And so we wanted to create the ultimate effortless essential that stayed with you wherever you wandered. So we created the On the Glow Blush and Illuminator. It was a double-sided stick formulation, lip and cheek product on one side, nude glow illuminator on the other side. And we could show you in a video how you could wear it 16 different ways. Use the Illuminator as cream eyeshadow. Use the Lip and Cheek Formula as lipstick or as blush, or mix them together to create a dewy, beautiful blush. You know, use the highlighter on your clavicle. During clavicle season, when you're showing it all off, put it all over your legs and have glowy legs. Like, there was just so many things you could do with this one powerhouse multitasker. It created so much value in a consumer's life. At one price point, you didn't have to buy four different things. You could buy one thing. You could keep it in your bag, travel with it anywhere, fuss-free, foolproof, do it yourself. And we won an Allure Best of Beauty Award for it. And we really believed in our vision, and we believed in the vision of the brand. And we said, let's tell the story of the brand with one product instead of having 80 products or 60 products or 40 products, because we didn't want it. We were like, fewer things do more. And so if that's the premise, let's start with one thing. So we literally launched with one SKU. People thought we were crazy. It was such a risk.
Yeah. It makes me really think about just like my experience as a content creator and like trying all of these different beauty brands. I guess now your company has been around for many years now. Like, do you think it's really important to like specialize in one category of product? Like, I know that you guys have, you have amazing skincare and you have amazing makeup, but is there, is there like one category that you sort of focus your energies on? And is that like important?
We started with color initially, and I think you have to build trust with the consumer before you switch categories. You really have to have credibility and trust. And when we went into skincare and we launched our Baggage Claim Gold Eye Mask, which you're familiar with, they de-puff, hydrate, and brighten that delicate under eye area. I basically call it coffee for your face. And Baggage Claim became wildly successful because we used small molecular weight hyaluronic acid, and we use aloe leaf to soothe, and camu camu extract, which is an intense form of vitamin C. So use great ingredients, have a real story. Mm-hmm. A lot of our formulations have clinical results. We use 1% pentobitin in our Dive-In moisturizer. It locks in moisture for up to 72 hours. You know, our vitamin C concentrate has up to 20% of our C-suite complex. So it's really going to deliver those brightening results and tackle things like age spots, sunspots, hyperpigmentation, and whatnot. So really, you have to deliver on the results. It doesn't matter what category you're in. Even our mascaras, like, they deliver on results. Upgraded Lashes has a growth factor in the lashes that helps you, you know, grow your lashes, and has clinical data associated with it by using it regularly. So everything we do, we really believe in innovating, and we have real results attached to it. So I think that you can launch multiple categories, but you have to have the results and the data to back it up. And the performance, because consumers come back for performance. They'll buy things for marketing once, but they come back for performance. And I have an old saying that newness drives sales. Newness, having new items and new SKUs and marketing can get people to buy things once. So newness drives sales, but core, your core items in your assortment, those drive profit, because it's the repeat purchase on those that drives the profitability of the business.
Totally. That makes so much sense. Like, new buzzy product launches, like, they create excitement on social media and marketing and
hype and sales.
Yeah, absolutely. Has there been a hardest lesson that you had to learn as an entrepreneur in general?
I think the hardest lesson is knowing what you're good at and knowing what you're not. You know, being self-aware is the most difficult skill for any CEO or founder. People have visions and ideas, and they believe they're the best ideas and the best visions. And then you have to really assemble and bring and motivate a team of people to then turn that vision into a reality. And so you need to be self-aware about what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I think that's the hardest lesson for people to learn, is to be introspective and to think about what you're good at and what you're not.
Yeah, definitely. I have a few more questions just around, you know, having a new business, having a new company, sort of trying to get it off of the ground. I guess for someone with a new company in general, like, how do we know when to self-fund or to raise capital? And like, where do we start?
I have a rule of thumb. Don't raise money unless you absolutely need it. The path to bootstrapping is always an amazing path, and it can take you very far. I believe that necessity is the mother of invention. You figure out a way to do things when you don't have funds. And the second you have a lot of money, it's like it burns a hole in your pocket and you end up spending it on things you shouldn't. So, you know, I really think that it's important to be a good steward of your capital. Whatever capital you have to spend it wisely. And so don't raise money unless you absolutely need to raise money. Like, if you have you need money to fulfill orders, then you raise money. So that's my philosophy on fundraising.
Okay, makes sense. And then I guess with time, say you are looking to raise money and you are looking to pitch investors, do you have any top tips, any sort of like investment 101, if you will?
Yeah, I think about what kind of investor you want. Do you want a family office that's going to be patient capital and evergreen capital that is going to be with you on the ride for an indefinite amount of time? Do you want venture capital money because you believe you're in a high growth business that is going to need a lot of capital very quickly and deliver very high returns? You have to think about what kind of capital you need first. Then you have to think about what type of investor you're looking for. Remember, having an investor is a marriage without divorce until you sell the business. So you need to really like the personality and the energy of the person. You're going to spend a lot of time with them. So I think you have to do a lot of pre-work on what you're looking for, a lot of self-awareness, a lot of soul searching about what's right for the business. Then you make lists, you target, you get warm introductions, you go on LinkedIn, you reach out. And then I always tell people to have an A list of investors they would love, a B list of investors they'd be okay with. Start with the B list first. Start pitching them. Every time you come out of a pitch meeting, write down three things that you did well and keep doing them. Write down three things you didn't do well or questions they had, because you'll realize that working with investors is like pattern recognition. Every time you go into a meeting, they're going to ask you the same questions. So you'll understand how to answer them and what to do. And then you can hit that top A list that you want and hopefully close a deal with one of them once you've practiced on the B list.
Fair. Those are great tangible tips. I love that. And I like that you mentioned LinkedIn because, right, it's all about just making connections.
Yes.
Right, and reaching out, putting yourself out there.
100% networking. Network to get work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you're also an investor yourself. You have, you know, dipped your toe in a number of different sort of ventures. What makes a good investment? Like, what is something that, you know, stands out in your mind that would like get you excited about potentially investing in a new company?
So when I'm doing an early stage investment, like call it a pre-seed, seed deal, typically it is people, idea, opportunity. It's always the founder that motivates me and excites me. Do I like this person? Do I think they have good energy? Do they have the skill set to execute on this vision? So it's about the people. Is it the founder? Is it the founding team? People is the investment in early days, because the idea is like, everyone starts with an idea and the company they end up with is pretty far from the idea they started with usually. And it takes many ebbs and flows and ideations to get it to a place where it really becomes commercially viable. So I think betting on people is what the bet is on the early stage. People, the idea, and the opportunity, making sure you're investing in a large and growing market and to themes that actually speak to what's going on in the world today. So topicals about inclusivity around skincare, Super Zero around sustainability, you know, Shaz and Keeks around hair and destigmatizing how Southeast Asians feel about their hair. There's just like, there are themes that are alive there and markets that are growing. And those were the investment thesis for those investments. For later stage investments, when the company has been around for a few years and has traction, you're not looking at people, idea, opportunity, because they've already built a business. You're looking for people, product, and distribution. Are the people there? Do they have do the leaders there have the skill set to retain and attract the best talent to grow this business? Is the product working? Is there product market fit? And what are the distribution channels that they're going to go after? So you're putting money behind a company that's achieved some level of success, and you're saying, okay, they had took a little bit of money and they had achieved a certain level of success. Mm-hmm. If I give them more money, can they get to the next level of success? So you're putting money behind something that's already working at a later stage, and you want to make sure it is working and that you have a clear path to how they're going to grow. What is the distribution strategy?
Okay, got it. So early stage, all about the founder, all
people,
about the story.
Yeah, people, idea, opportunity.
Okay.
And later stage, people, product, distribution.
Okay, I like that. It's easy to break down.
Yeah, easy to remember.
Do you have any like best resources for entrepreneurs or like women to get their company off the ground?
So I think the best thing you could do is peer mentorship. Talk to other entrepreneurs who've gotten their businesses off the ground. Talk to them about the tools they're using, the tech they're using, the freelance talent that they're using, the way they're finding that freelance talent. A lot of it is peer mentorship. I think that the best tool is to talk to other people.
Okay. Love that. So switching gears a little bit, you are a busy mom. You have a lot going on. So I'd love to dig in here. Like, you've had such a successful career and I feel like you've managed to do it all and you make it look very easy. But I want to ask you, like, what's the hardest part in trying to balance both? And I say balance, but I feel like it's a catch-22. I ask most of my sort of like mom entrepreneurs, if you will, and they say that there is no balance. So I'm just curious, right, like, what your thoughts and perspective is.
It's all about deciding what to be good at certain points and being good at that. So it's like, I'm going to be 100% present with you during this podcast. 10 a.m. Eastern, my kids are in school. I told you I turned off the Bluetooth in my phone and my iPad so that my AirPods wouldn't get distracted with other stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not on Slack. I'm not answering work emails. I'm 100% present with you in this conversation. I think learning the lesson of being 100% present is a very difficult lesson. And as a mom of two and a career mom of two, it is the single most important lesson you'll learn. So when I'm with my kids and I'm doing their homework, I'm 100% present. It's blocked on my calendar. I'm not on Slack. I'm not on work email. I'm not on a phone call trying to like multitask and do their homework and help them at the same time. It's be 100% present in what you do and give people the time and attention that they deserve and then go to the next thing. So do few things and do them one at a time and do them really well. So, you know, when I'm at night, I often block time every single day because I can't get through my inbox because I have meetings and I have to be present in those. And I have podcasts and interviews and homework to do with my kids and dinner to make for my family. And so I keep up with my email during different time blocks during the day, but I can't get through everything every day ever. So every single evening, I dedicate time to go through my inbox and spend quality time responding to people in a thoughtful manner.
I actually completely agree with you. I feel like doing something 100% is like just more productive. I think there's a time and a place for multitasking. Fine. You're around the house with your kids. Yeah. You want to clean. You want to like cook, do something. Right. Fine. But I think when it comes to work and mom life, it's actually a great tip. And I found that in my own experience, like getting really frustrated, like still having Parker here, like kind of running around with like a chicken with his head cut off and me trying to voice note my business partner, trying to like post on Instagram, like it doesn't work well. And then, you just get frustrated. And so I completely agree with you. I'm on the same page.
You don't do anything well. So like there's a time for multitasking when you're on a work call and you're Windexing the bathroom. It's okay. Because you're listening to the phone call and you're talking and you can Windex at the same time and clean the bathroom. It's okay. But 100%. You know, when you're doing what I call deep work and thinking and strategy, you have to give it your full time and attention.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. So this next question is a bit of a selfish question and it's something that I have shared with you. And it's a question about going from one child to two and what the hardest part is, because I am expecting. I am through.
And you're glowing. And I could tell from the minute I saw you.
I couldn't believe that you knew. And then you guessed that I was having a girl.
I know. I really have an insane sense of intuition. I've always had this. And I know it sounds very hokey and bizarre. But the moment we got on the podcast, I told you, I'm like, you're having a baby. Like, I just knew it. I could feel the energy. I could just feel it across Zoom, which is even more bizarre. We weren't even in person.
It's really bizarre.
So going from one kid to two, I love that. I had my kids very close together. So my kids are less than 2 years apart.
Okay.
They are 2 years apart minus 4 days. And so I think it's amazing that they have company. I think that's the single best advantage is that two kids can keep each other busy. They can play chess together when they get older. They can play ping pong together. They can listen to music together. They can, you know, do activities together. They can play tennis together. Like there's so much they can do together. And I love that they have company and I love that inbound support system and friendship. I think that in terms of parenting, it's more work for sure. But I think incrementally, it's not as much work. Like if you're making food, you're making food for both of them. And if you're getting them ready for bed, you get them on the same schedule and you get them ready for bed. Like at some point you can get them on the same schedule and it becomes a lot easier. And it's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's 1 + 1/2 at some point that equals 2. You're doing half the work for the for that incremental second child.
Totally. That actually breaks it down like really nicely and not in a so overwhelming way, right?
Yeah.
I really appreciate that. So thank you. Thank you for offering that.
Yes.
And I guess like whether you're...
And I'm excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you. When I think too far ahead, that's when the overwhelm sort of sets in. But for now, mm-hmm. we go day to day. Like I feel like I have things under control with one. So we'll get there. So I guess like whether you're a new mom or whether you're a mom that's maybe taken a career break, and they're ready mm-hmm. to dive back in, I just feel like that could be really intimidating for a lot of women. Like, do you have any advice there?
I think that you need to set yourself up for success, not failure. So this notion of like being a martyr and saying like, oh my God, I have to go back to work and jumping in back full time. Like, mm-hmm. I don't recommend that. I really, really don't recommend that. I think it's super important. So I think that... you need to phase your way in. You really need to like be kind and patient with yourself. You just gave birth to a human mm-hmm. and you need to put that in perspective and you need to listen to your body and understand your own needs when it comes back to going back to work. So I think there's some version of a transitional plan that has to occur at home and at work. So it needs to be this phased in approach of handling things one at a time as you can, bite off what you can chew, start going back to work a few hours a day or a day a week or then 2 days a week, like phase in approach and be kind to yourself and listen to your body. And when it's not, when it's feeling like too much, retreat and, you know, work on a different schedule. And I think that that's really important. I think diving in and expecting yourself to just jump back into your career in an old way when you've had a child and your body's going through so many changes, mm-hmm. your family's going through so many changes, your hormones are going through some changes, is not a recipe for success.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Be kind and patient with yourself.
Definitely. That completely resonates with me. And I love that advice. It's right. It's not going back in like 100%. And at the end of the day, like things fall on the mom. A lot falls on the mom. And
yes,
I think that's realistic advice.
Yep.
So switching gears, tell us what's new with Wander.
Yeah, we just launched Pack Up and Glow. This was a 3-year journey on launching and then like an incredibly multitasking SPF. So this protects against UVA, UVB. It's a mineral SPF 40. It prevents against blue light and environmental aggressors as well. It prevents photo aging and moisture loss. It perfects the skin. It gives a gorgeous glow. I put it on the weekend and I just leave the house because I don't feel like I need to put anything else on my face. It has a satin finish, which primes the face in case you want to put makeup on top. I add a little Dualist under eye concealer today to protect you from the scariness of my under eye bags. And really, this is just an incredible formulation. People who like mineral sunscreens tend to be really turned off by the white cast that you get with this. This does not have a white cast at all. We have a proprietary technology and encapsulation technology that we put around the molecule that allows us to use a lower level of zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, but yet have an SPF 40. At the same time, and we use a non-nano zinc oxide, and those are physical sunscreen filters that really protect the outer barrier and block sunlight from coming in. It also doesn't have the drying aspects that you see from a mineral sunscreen, and it doesn't have the greasiness and the oily residue that you get with a chemical sunscreen. So this is like a total unicorn. I literally call it our unicorn, and it's been doing phenomenally well for us. So we're so excited for all the consumers who've taken a bet on buying Pack Up and Glow Mineral SPF 40. It's enriched with so many wonderful ingredients like vitamin D and antioxidant complex, which is powered by green tea. It's got hyaluronic acid. It's really just a powerhouse that I have in my arsenal and I use every day, sometimes multiple times a day.
Okay, cool, cool. It sounds incredible. It's one shade. Wow.
Yes, it's one universal. And so it's not a tinted sunscreen. It just has a peachy, glowy luminosity to it, which is flattering on every skin tone. And even the fairest of the fair who were like afraid like of seeing that, they were like, oh, is this peach going to look yellow on me? Or is it going to look white? It literally leaves a golden glow on your face. It looks beautiful on every skin tone.
Okay, cool. Well, I can't wait to try it.
Yeah.
You know that I'm such a lover of your lip retreat. I have it on right now.
Yes, I love lip retreat.
Skinny Dip is my shade, and it's all over my Instagram reels. So this isn't like a shameless Wander plug. This is legit, guys.
I'm telling you. And Skinny Dip is literally the most popular shade, and people love it. We also, if you love Skinny Dip, you might really also like Tan Lines, which is beautiful.
It's funny you say that. I tried Tan Lines for a dinner that I had for an event, and it was perfect. So it was like a little notch up from Skinny Dip. So big fan. Yes.
Yeah. I love it. I love that you love it. Lipotreat is just a powerhouse. And if you have, you know, dry lips and you want the shine of a gloss without the stick of a gloss, and you want real nourishment and real active ingredients to nourish your lips, Lipotreat is the way to go.
So what's the beauty and morning routine looking like these days? Is it quick and easy? Like, what's the deal? I know you're down in Miami, so it's a little different maybe.
It's all quick and easy. Yeah. I get up in the morning. I don't wash my face in the morning. I wash my face in the evening. I splash my face with lukewarm water, not too hot, not too cool. I then use our Sightseer vitamin C concentrate, because for me, I think antioxidant protection is super important. You want to do that under your sunscreen, because it actually bolsters the effect of the SPF. And then I go in right with Pack Up and Glow. So I have this one step, which is my Sightseer concentrate, which has vitamin C, and it also has hydration in it because it has hyaluronic acid. And that nourishes, protects, and hydrates my face. And then I put the SPF on top, which is going to protect me from UVA, UVB, blue light. And then I'm good. So I kind of go through my day with just those two products. If I want to add makeup, because I'm seeing you on Zoom, then I put a little upgraded lashes on my lashes and give them that great volume and curl and length at the same time. I'll throw on a little Lip Retreat or On the Glow Blush and Illuminator in Sienna Sunset, which is my favorite kind of like peachy nude for medium skin tones on my lips and my cheeks. And my Dualist Concealer in the shade medium or golden medium, depending on how tan I am. And that's what I do. I'm really like effortless and easy.
Yeah, quick and easy. I love it. Well, Divya, we could talk to you literally for days, but we are rounding out with one of our last questions for you. And that is, what's like a last word of wisdom, tip of advice, or something that you like really want to leave our audience with today?
I think the best piece of advice I can give everybody listening to this is, don't be hard on yourself. Like, compare yourself to your best and your potential. Don't be focused on everyone else's Instagram, because that's their highlight reel. And you're going through everyday challenges, and don't be hard on yourself. You're going to have good days, you're going to have bad days. But the fact that you power through and really focus on moving the ball forward and achieving your own personal best, that's the best thing you can do for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you said the highlight reel aspect, because I feel like I've been talking about that nonstop lately. It's not real life.
Yeah. Everyone makes pregnancy look amazing on Instagram, and I'm like, I didn't feel that way. I didn't look that way. But I'm like, that's someone else's journey, not mine.
Absolutely. And I totally relate to that, because, you know, I'm 17 weeks now, but up until 15 weeks, I was at home, no energy, sick, vomiting in the early weeks. But we don't really get to share any of that for so many reasons. And also, like, I don't really want to share that, like, after the fact. I kind of want to forget about that.
100%.
So yeah, it's a journey. But
do you?
What's next? Exactly. Do you? What's next for you? Is there anything like exciting coming up for you or for Wander? Anything?
Stay tuned. I'm on Instagram at dgugnani. So it's dgugnani. And we're at Wander_beauty. And I'm very excited about things that are going to be happening in the coming months and this fall. So stay tuned for the journey.
Awesome. Well, we can't wait to keep up with you. This was a brilliant episode. Thank you as always for being with us again. And we'll have you back anytime.
Amazing. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you guys all so much for listening. If you found value from this episode, please share it with a friend. Tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at Monday_Network. We love to hear your feedback, and we'll catch you next time.